Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talk to Scott McRoberts, who is the Athletics Director for the University of Guelph. We're once again diving into the world of sport, and from your neighborhood gym to professional team sports in the major leagues, that wide world of sport has been dramatically affected by the global COVID-19 pandemic. For many thousands of students at the University of Guelph, sport is a big part of their daily routine, whether they're a varsity athlete, or they play on an intramural team, or they simply enjoy access to the gym, the pool, or the rink for personal exercise or enjoyment. Athletics is an important part of student life, but what part does athletics play when there's hardly any student life on campus at all? What is it like these days at the UFG's athletic facilities? COVID life in campus athletics is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Back in March, campus emptied overnight as COVID-19 turned from an international news story into a global pandemic. One week, 20,000 students were walking all over campuses, going from classes to the cafeteria or wherever else, and the next week, campus was a ghost town. Perhaps even ghostier than the quietest days of the summer semester, because everything but the most essential services and research were closed. The east end of campus between Weingard Walk and East Ring Road is where you find most of campus's indoor athletic facilities, and those felt especially quiet. The end of March means playoff time for varsity teams. It means students trying to burn off end of the semester stress in the gym. But the start of the COVID-19 pandemic was the beginning of an all-new kind of stress, too. In the months following the March outbreak, the UFG Athletics Department was able to put in place new safety protocols as Ontario and campus started to reopen. Students, at least the few hundred living on campus or going to campus for one of a few in-person classes, were able to access facilities. But the Ontario University Association, the governing body for university athletics in Ontario, canceled all team play and tournaments for the fall and then for the winter semester. There would be no homecoming or no frosty mug night, the kinds of social events that even non-athletes take part in on the athletic calendar. And then came the second lockdown just after Christmas. This interview was recorded before that second lockdown went into effect, so McRoberts' picture he's presenting is rosier, but the takeaway is definitely a feeling that something very important in the fabric of student life has been lost, or at the very least, temporarily misplaced. Scott McRoberts will take us inside the fabric of that on this edition of the Guelph Politicast. He will tell us his own harrowing COVID lockdown story about how he was away from Guelph with one of the Griffin teams when the order came to close everything down last March. He will also discuss the COVID realities of athletics on campus, how many people were using the facilities before the lockdown, and how U of G students were managing with all the restrictions, and by all appearances, managing better than some of their peers at other schools. And finally, we will talk about how Guelph's varsity athletes, including several Olympians, have pivoted in their training when sport might restart on campus, and what McRoberts is missing the most about his normally very busy athletic facilities. So I caught up with Scott McRoberts before the holiday break via Zoom. So Scott McRoberts, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
First, you are talking from your home office, which implies that you don't make it down to campus very much, but I do imagine there are some days you do have to be on campus. I haven't been on campus since lockdown started in March, so maybe just to live vicariously through you for a minute, what is it like down on campus these days? You know, what's the feeling?
Well, I'm in my office about twice a week, so those are the days that you get up, you shower, you actually put on not sweatpants, and you pour your coffee, and you commute to work with the radio. So it's nice. You hear about those people just commuting around their neighborhoods before they set up in their home office. So that's been nice to be in there a couple of days a week. However, I'm there more on campus for my kids' activities, and campus is definitely different. It's quiet, it's desolate. However, our end where we are, our athletic facilities, we're all open, serving both our students and the community, and they continue to come in under the social distancing measures, and something we're very proud of.
Mm-hmm. Is it like summer? Because I mean, you know, being on campus in the summer can be pretty desolate, but I mean, it's also nice weather, and you know, the campus is nice, and it's good place for a quiet walk. I mean, is that the feeling, or is it kind of like depressive now that it's like the time of year where the campus would be full, and you're sort of thinking about that too?
I'll be honest, one of the things that drive me of why I got into the university environment is just the energy that you feel every day with the people, the students, and it's not there. So I purposely make sure I walk around when I'm there with my mask on and check in on things and go to some of the student athlete practices, because it gives you a bit of a purpose, reminds you why you're doing all this. And I talked to the students in the fitness center and how important us staying open and doing what we're doing is to their mental well-being. It's not about, you know, the first week I was back was not about, oh my God, I've missed this piece of equipment or I've missed this part. It's like, oh my God, thank you. I feel safe here. Thank you for opening. You know, I haven't felt safe at other places, or I haven't gotten back into it. And one of the biggest things was the students telling us how this is their home and they feel comfortable and safe here in our fitness center, and this is their place. And so it felt like coming home to them. And it was really important for us to hear, because we didn't know what to expect coming into September, of the behavior of the students or how they would come out or how they would feel. And so for me, it's been good in our buildings, but you don't have to wait in Starbucks for a latte anymore in the UC. And it is, I can use the word depressing. And when you do see some life on campus, you make sure you chat, and you can get that quiet walk in, and the campus's beauty is still there. It's just quiet, and you miss that energy of what is our UG campus.
Well, you've kind of mentioned it, and I think a lot of people are curious. Gyms are sort of one of these, any athletic facilities really are kind of like one of these big question mark areas in terms of reopening and things. How safe is it? How many people are allowed at once? Can you talk a bit about how the athletic facilities you supervise are kind of operating these days?
Absolutely. And I'm glad you asked that, Adam, because I want to make sure I do a shout out to my team of individuals on my team and a number of us. In late May, early June, I got assigned to the Minister of Sports Task Force on Return to Sport. And for any of us, and I'm not just talking sport, for any of us, there's no playbook here. There's no guidance document that shows you this is what happens when this happens. Everything's from scratch. So you have to take out all the stuff you've learned from before or been taught, or Google search, I wonder if there's a document on this. It isn't. And as I got assigned to that, we assigned our own team late May, early June, not knowing when or what this will look like or when we open. And it was our return to play team. And we worked probably a good 10 to 12 weeks on this draft plan that ended up in a 125-page document. And now I'm going to take that back to something interesting that's occurred in the last 3 weeks with this work we did in June. We were lucky because within our team, we had great outreach with national and provincial sport organizations, the Olympic bodies. And so it wasn't us just sitting down and say, what does this look like? The consultative process that we went through with public health, with lawyers, with the city, with the sport organizations across the country, with experts, with panels, it wasn't us just sitting down and figuring out. And the interesting thing is the document that we came as our return to document for our department. There was no color system like we are in now that the provincial have us in, the green, yellow, orange, red, gray. And those are part of our objective when we sat down to do this was not meet the minimum or the baseline. Our objective was, our guiding principles were, we want people to feel safe. We want people to feel welcome, and we want to go above and beyond the minimal protocols in order to do this. And we felt if we achieve these three things right off the bat when we started the planning, then we will remain open. We will have our patrons follow the rules and the policies and provide that outlet that we knew everybody needed at that time. And so in saying that, the document we produced back in June, which became our opening document July 3rd, when a couple of facilities opened, those actually met the protocols under level orange, which we know as today. And again, I say that because in planning back then, we did not have that color tier system. And then as that came out, we started to go through the colors here in our region. We were worried like, oh my God, we're gonna have to change all these things. Oh, we're gonna have to change all these things. And we realized our document and our protocols measured that in the orange category. So for us, it was comforting to know we had gone above and beyond, but it also allowed us to know we were doing the right things and doing things safe. And that's what's been able to keep us open.
It was a happy accident.
My team for that, because I mean, it was hours upon hours of every day, and that's all they focused on in order to get our students and our student athletes and our community back into our buildings in the safest manner possible and with no clear objection. And the logistics and the operations of that was insurmountable.
Mm-hmm. Hearing you explain all that, though, I mean, there are so many facets to your job, right? There's not just the organized sports aspect. There's also, you know, intramural sports, you know, kids coming, and even just kids coming to use the pool to work out, you know, just of their own basic health interest. And you know, there are more than that is offered by health services as well. And all of this kind of falls under your umbrella. I mean, you talk about throwing out the books and the total, you know, unprecedentedness of this. I mean, so even before going into this with a roundtable in May or June, like going back to March and this hits and you just have to shut everything down. I mean, how do you, as the director of athletics at the U of G, even like begin to wade through like the million different variables of a situation like this? I mean, I wake up in the morning sometimes and I have like a to-do list of five things and I start to melt down. Like, where do I start with this list of five things? Right. And this is that times a million, at least from how I would feel about the situation, which is probably why I'm not a director of anything, but there you go.
Yeah. I mean, other than the painfulness of it in your heart to shut down the facility, shutting down was relatively easy. Everybody's out, you close your doors, you send a message out, and it's not as easy as that. And just before we were shutting down, I was actually at Nationals with the men's hockey team on the Thursday night. And we got told 10 p.m. that night that Nationals was shutting down and we have 24 hours to get out of the hotel. So try at 11 at night finding a flight within a 12-hour window to fly 45 individuals back to Guelph and finding a bus to get to the airport and all that. So my immediate thought was the logistics of, and this was before we knew anything was shutting down, but I'll remember this the rest of my life is, okay, the first thing is how do I get all these young men home to their families and their parents who are now starting to freak out? And how do I get them home safely? And that was my first priority, not knowing what was going to come the next day. To where the next morning I had a call from a senior men at the university saying, you know, be prepared that within the next 7 days, we could be shutting down the entire campus, including all of your buildings and facilities. So then, you know, my early days of my career was all running international major events. So, you know, when something happens, there's no playbook. You go here, you know, the ability to pivot, the ability to react, but I go into the logistical operational things. And then when we did get that call just a few days later to shut our buildings down, you know, I instructed all my staff, grab paper, grab pen, you know, grab enough that we could be, you know, not back in our offices for, you know, even a month. And I remember one of my staff looking at a month, this will be 2 weeks and we'll be back. And you really think a month, if it's a month, this is going to be really crazy. And here we are. So that back then was the first thing. And then you start to process at that time, you know, your own family, your own kids, your mother, you know, your sister who works in long-term care, your cousin that's a nurse in the eMERGE. And so you take care of the other people first, and then you're starting to think of the people around you and how that impacts them. And so it was quite emotional the first few weeks, especially because coronavirus. Okay, what is this? Is going back to the SARS and stuff like that. So, you know, I take you through that sequence. It's every time I talk or see a men's hockey player, I said the last time I ate a meal in a restaurant with a number of people was with you. The last time life felt a bit normal was with you. And so you never forget those moments, who you're with and what happened. And, you know, no one ever wants to shut the doors, which for our facilities is all about access for people.
I think we forget, just hearing you talk about it, is like those early days where no one knew exactly how the virus was transmitted, the specifics of it, how we, you know, as you say, in your situation, basically dropped everything. You're in the middle of a tournament and you have to drop everything and go into this new situation. It just, it reminds me too, though, and we talked about this already, but like how busy campus is usually, especially at this time of year, and people are wrapping things up for the semester. Thinking about your student athletes, the ones who are on teams, the ones who, you know, maybe looking at going further with their sport beyond university, how has this specifically affected them, like their training regimen? Maybe I'll ask this in a second, but, you know, just for where they are right now and where they hope to be when this is over, you know, what's life like for them right now in terms of that, their training?
Yeah, I mean, we've been very lucky, and the intercollegiate staff and our coaches have done an amazing job, but that doesn't help out with the amazing job of both the students and the student athletes following our protocols. And, you know, we've been very, very lucky compared to the other 20 schools in Ontario. We've started practice just after Labor Day, and we are still practicing this week, and I'm not sure if that's happened on any other campus. We can do all we want, but if the students decide on a Saturday night to go to a house party, their team's going to be shut down for 2 weeks. It's just, look at the numbers, right? And I remember talking to a couple athletes, and I said, what are you doing Saturday night? Like, what are you doing? They're like, you know, we're just staying in, probably like you, and watching Netflix together. I'm like, guys, just be honest. What are you doing? Like, what are you, like, we're doing that because us being able to see each other, practice together, and play our sports is our lifeline right now. That is more important than us going to a house party for 2 hours. It's not about getting better at catching the ball or shooting harder or making this play. It's about, I've been doing this since I was 3, 4, 5 years old, every day. And that got taken away from me for months. And, you know, I take it to the same people. It's not just the student athletes. It's that person that 3 times a week, they're practicing in their choir because that's their piece. That's their rec. That's their mental outlet. And this has all been about that, their mental well-being. You know, I the week before the men's hockey, when we shut it down, I was out in Edmonton with the track team seeking our 4th national title. And hours before the event, we got told you're not allowed to high five or hug after a race. And we're like, okay. And again, this is, you know, 9 days before the nationals of hockey. And so we implemented the foot tap. So we were, you know, kind of joking, okay, no high fives, no hugs. What's this all COVID thing about? We're going to tap shoes when we want to congratulate each other. And then you think of those athletes after, they, you know, we have 9 Olympians on our track team. You know, they missed the Olympics. So they're now training in our centers to get ready for Tokyo, which may include their parents, may include fans, may not happen at all. I am optimistic the Olympics will happen. But it's been a change of life for them. And I have to shout out to them again, because, you know, the media talks about this age group, this demographic, and that's where the spread's happening. But I'm very proud of our student athletes. We aren't practicing today if they aren't doing the right things. And from the staff and the coaches down to the athletes, I've been more impressed than I ever have in my 4.5 years here on their behavior and what they're doing, because that shows to us how important their ability to practice is. And I got our football coach here who has 90 players, right? And under our protocols, he has to have the offense practice separately, And then within that offense, he has to cut that offense in half. So he has two offensive practices and he has two defensive practices. And then trying to keep everybody together. And I look at the team of track and football, there's so many people, but our coaches aren't just talking about the playbook. Our coach's number one job is no longer coaching. It's making sure our student athletes are okay, mentally, physically, financially, nutritionally. And that's something, again, that they don't sign up for every day. And that's their main priority. That is their purpose right now. And we're just lucky we have some of the best coaches in the country and that we're still able to do what we do. But I think that embodies what the Griffin values are about.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, is there like a Guelph difference, do you think? From the sounds of things, these are not inherently Guelph-specific values. But as you said, too, it seems to be that Guelph is doing these things maybe a bit better than some of our competitors.
Yeah, I think what happened at Western, and this wasn't in their intercollegiate, but what happened early on in Western during the first week, and then they had to go into shutting their facilities and their practices down. I think that was a big wake-up call for everybody. No one wants to be the example, but I think it really hit home for a lot of people early on that, wow, okay, this is no joke. And overnight, this all happened, and these are shut down. And you talk about having control and wanting to have control. This is something that none of us feel like we have control anymore. But when we're doing all these return to plans, we realize we could do everything we want. But kind of like what the government preaches to us every day, unless the students and the student athletes do these things, we're not going to be successful. And it's kind of as a wait and see. And it's surpassed our expectations tenfold. I know we have a long way to go, but here we are November 30th and we haven't had to shut our buildings down or our program down. And I knock on wood saying that, but that's because of them. And I never feel safer than in the fitness center, because I know what our protocols are, but our students have been phenomenal. They do everything right. It has got to be the cleanest place I know around. We clean every minute, our protocols, we shut down the place after 75 minutes, we spray down the whole place. I've never felt more safe and I've never felt more, safe around the people I'm with because I talk to them and I observe their behaviors and it's phenomenal because they understand that they have a stake in this as all of us to keep this open. And one or two mistakes and it's closed down for everybody. And I might've gone off a little bit on that, but it's something I'm very passionate about and I've seen and something that's really helped me get through this personally is just seeing the reaction of the people.
Well, I mean, it's fascinating to hear you talk about it because so much has been made about gyms and there was the case of that one spin cycle in Hamilton from which, 100 cases erupted. And to hear you say that you don't, the safest place you feel is the athletic center, given everything that's sort of out there in the media and the ecosystem about the dangers, the quote unquote dangers of gyms. I think it's a real statement that would probably catch a number of people listening to this off guard.
Yeah, it is. And the second something happens, you try to follow up on that. It's all about your protocol. Some fitness centers may not be as aggressive as us. Some people may want to find the minimum standards. It is not like that. I mean, you walk into our fitness center, you know where you need to be standing, you know where you need to be. And we've even redeployed our coaches part-time. So our coaches are in the fitness center, cleaning down equipment, talking to the patrons. And I just, I go back to such a respectful group of individuals, our students and what they've done. And you're right. I don't do a lot of the other things that I could do because it doesn't feel comfortable to me outside of the fitness center and going places and certain things. But I feel very comfortable. And for me, it was a decision of my mental well-being too. I could only do so much in the basement over 4 months. I needed to get back into the gym, which is something I've known since I was in grade 10. That's been part of my lifestyle that got interrupted. And so it's important for me to get back. And who am I to preach, oh, it's fine to come here if I myself won't step into the place. And that to me was maybe number five on the priority list. It was all about the other things first, but I also like to see how we're doing and what we're doing. And I like to talk to the students to find out what they're feeling, what they may wish we had or trouble with this. And we have made adjustments based on students' feedback around booking times and lineups and stuff like that. And again, I gotta have one of the most adaptable staff in the world with a can-do attitude, do what we've done. But you're right. I feel very comfortable there and I feel very safe there. And I also feel very respected there, not as the director of athletics, but another user within the facility. And I think that says a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thinking in about the students, and this is the other piece of this I wanted to get to, is, you know, there are no competitive sports at any Ontario university for the spring semester. You still have these student athletes, of course, doing their training. They're keeping on top of their training and all that. But what is, like, maybe the cumulative effect of this? I mean, training is one thing, but I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but training towards a goal of actually playing at some point helps a lot too, because playing against others who are not your fellow teammates teaches you things about yourself as well. And so what is being missed, do you think, right now with, you know, even though the students are training, what are they missing from not being able to implement that training in competition?
I think first most, they miss seeing each other every day because that's what they're used to. I mean, a lot of these people, their relationships they develop. I know for me as a former varsity athlete, three of my teammates are still my best friends, you know, that I still see regularly. Now our kids play together and you form those bonds on the bus. You form those bonds in the overnight trips to the hotel. You form those bonds in the brutal season you had and the adversity you overcame and the playoff run you had and just those memories and moments. No one remembers the shot you took on practice on Thursday, and I think they miss, I mean, any athlete at this level is into it because they love competition. You know, they have butterflies in their stomach Friday night and they can't sleep because they're so excited for the next day. And those butterflies are replaced by anxiety or depression. I mean, it's no joke like any other. Our student athletes aren't immune to this and our students aren't immune to this. Mental health issues are way up. And that's what we look for every day. And so I think, you know, if I was to ask them, it's game day. It's the preparation. It's the diligence. It's what you've gone through that week to get ready for that game. It's the goals you set for the team for the year and where you want to be. I mean, we have three teams this year that I know would be competing for a national championship that typically haven't maybe competed, such as our women's basketball team or our women's soccer team, because they've been building up to this and they're at this point and this was the go year. And you feel sorry for those seniors that aren't going to get that chance to play that one more year. They're done unless they want to come back and invest in the university for another semester. So you feel sorry for those seniors, but at least they've gotten to experience that intercollegiate. And then you think about the first year athletes that aren't going to get that first year experience that just missed their prom and they've missed out on a lot. And so how's that going to impact them? Yes, they're still going to get the opportunity to play competitive sports wearing the Griffin uniform again. That will happen in their time here. However, they've missed out on a lot. And so, you know, it's going to be important for us as always, but even more so to just make sure we're taking care of them going forward and knowing that this is going to have a long lasting impact. And for those that it's the last year, you make sure you stay connected to them because of the bond you've had during their time here. And that you want to let you know that, you know, we've been through a lot together and now look at how this finishes, you know, keep that contact as an alumni. So, you know, I really think from my standpoint, you know, that's it, that's it. And the ability to push yourself on game day in competitions far different than practice.
Have you know, has there been any discussion about how, I mean, we kind of see the pro leagues playing, NFL's playing right now, and we can make a point of the issues that they're facing there, the issues that the NBA might be courting when they start play next month. you were literally at the table. So what considerations are there about, you know, proceeding with competition that you're thinking about that maybe, I mean, other than the money, of course, you know, that it maybe isn't being considered at the pro level, that, you know, they're playing, your players are not?
Well, you're right. The financial side of things is, you know, the millions of dollars that us athletic departments have lost. I mean, our revenues, you know, the big football game every year, our Frosty Mug game, bums and seats, our summer camps, our sponsorships, you know, our facility rentals that are running 24/7 almost, that got shut down. So we've been very largely impacted. It's just great with the support of the university, we've been able to keep our Griffin family together. And that's been very important. I mean, the people's livelihoods and their families. So I really appreciate that from the university. But yeah, it's going to be different. I think COVID has silver linings and glass half full items that we'll talk about even more down the road. But I think one of those is our ability now to have a reset or a change on how U Sports or OUA Sports actually operates. And the most important thing is getting our student athletes back to competition in a safe manner. And with that, there needs to be change. To me, and I spent years in the NCAA system in the States before I came back to my beloved country here in Canada. And so I understand both sides of the border. They're playing sports because their livelihood of their departments and universities for some is dependent on the TV revenue. Most schools' football TV revenue funds their entire athletic departments. The losses would be so insurmountable that they would never come back. Remember, early August, NCAA was not playing. Now, between football and college basketball, there's 80 games on the schedule on a Saturday, and maybe only 50 of them actually playing, you know. And, you know, my nephew goes to the University of Wisconsin, and he just got told that in January, their school is all online. But basketball season, hockey season will still, in football will still go on. So for them, it was definitely a revenue and in a legal side when athletes are able to generate income and other stuff in the way the NCAA operates. So I think there was too much legality and too much loss, and we've seen how the leadership has been, and really it's been about the revenue and the money versus the health and safety. We don't have TV contracts here, so I think it's inevitable that the health and safety is going to come the first and foremost. But I think in the fall, and we're already starting discussions, the discussions are happening. And we know that it's going to need to be an ABC type of scenario. But for me, if you're asking me personally, there's a few principles, guiding principles that go into this. Let's, you know, we're not all going to be vaccinated by September, but I'm happy to talk about vaccinations today, because 4 months ago, if I told you 70% of us could be vaccinated by next September, we'd always say, hallelujah, like, but that will never happen. And it could be now. However, who's going to have it and all that stuff comes into play. So what we're looking at is, what can we limit and control right now? We know everybody's financial situation is very tough. So what about if we put in some principles around no overnight stays, right? Regional play, you know, look what the NHL is doing. They're going to create a Canadian division under the certain rules. Okay. If the NHL can do something like that, so can we. And it's something that you never thought that the NHL would all of a sudden change its conference overnight. But it makes sense for a lot of reasons and allows the NHL to continue. You look, you know, and I'm talking about us selfishly in a geographical area. I'm not talking about some of the schools up north. But if you look at us, we're basically in an hour radius of Western, Laurier, Waterloo, Mac, and Brock. How can we create a regional play that doesn't have us having to stop off and go into the restaurants and sit down as a group of 40 or 30 or 90 if you're a football team, that doesn't have us having to stay overnight in a hotel? And it's not just the cost, but some of the transmission issues until they come under control. And we don't put people on a plane anymore just to go fly and play a game and come back home. The costs of that are insurmountable. So I think we have to look at how we can continue to play at least, and we're not talking about nationals yet. We're talking about just in our OUA conference. How can we do this from a regional approach? I do think it works for 95% And then those 5% that just on geographically, it's not necessarily fair to them. And is there a buy-in program for them to support them so we can all get back to it? But, you know, it's not about we didn't get to play Ottawa or we didn't get to fly here this year. It's about we got to play sport. And so you may see reduced number of games like you are in the NHL and the NBA. You may see more regional play. You may miss out on an odd rival. But I don't think people will miss out on that if it means them getting back to playing sport. And someone asked me, what is your dream in September? And I said, I would hope that our athletes are back playing. And if you want to add the cherry on top, I say it's in front of 100 students and their parents, you know, meaning we have something. I'm a big Packers fan. For the first time, the Packers let fans into their stadium last night when the state is really a massive outbreak. But there's 500 people in the stands out of 77,000 people they could hold. It's something, and it was done safely. And so, you know, first and foremost, if our athletes can be back playing in a safe manner that we all agree upon, and our health officials and our presidents, but then it's if we could see just a couple people enjoying the sport again. My last sport on my campus that I saw was the men's hockey championship. And there was never an atmosphere like in a long time that I've been a part of, even at the professional level. And over 5,000, close to 6,000 screaming people that stayed there with their kids for 6 hours to watch a triple overtime thriller. Then I walk in the rink to coach my kids' hockey team now, and there's 10 parents. And it's just, it's a bit of a lonely place, and it's a shock and awe on the system.
Because part of the gameplay, of course, is feeding off the fan energy if you're playing on home ice, and the players, you know, that energizes them to in a way that training doesn't prepare you for. It's, you know, feeding off that fan energy can carry the day.
Absolutely. 100%. And with our community, even more so. And I know we'll be back to that one day. Give me a year, but I know we will.
Well, I mean, looking to the, maybe not necessarily the far future, but I mean, you're thinking about September 2021, and there's a fairly decent chance, you know, we'll have enough vaccination that we'll be able to get back to something closely resembling normal. But I mean, I'm also thinking about 2-3 years, and I've talked to the medical officer of health about this too. It's just, you know, are we going to be wearing masks in, you know, for years into the future? These kind of like societal changes that come out of a time like this, you know, what does university sport look like 4 or 5 years from now? Is you know, will players be still wearing masks when they're not playing, or you know, will we still be using some of these safety protocols you've mentioned today?
Yeah. Take a screenshot of Pfizer and Moderna and what they're saying about, you know, 95% efficiency rate and, you know, 2 doses. And I talked about our logistical challenge shutting down, and that was the easy part. Reopening was a monumental task. How they're going to roll this out is another one. But I think it all depends on that. But, you know, it's not mandated to get vaccines. So are you going to, can you only play if you're vaccinated versus those that decide for personal reasons they're not? Is that, you know, how all that goes in, I have no clue. And nice thing is, I don't think that's my decision. So we'll take that. But yeah, it's, I still think at that time we'll be wearing masks on the sideline, and it proves that it works. It proves in all our practices, the protocols that we're putting in place, it works. Now you take a team like football, 90 of them are together. I haven't been for this semester. And so you say, are we going to take 4 buses to games instead of 2? Because we can't have 2 buses packed full of 2 people sitting together. Like, how is that going to work for transportation? Which is another aspect when we're talking about fall planning and travel, is you may have to double up your transportation just for socially distance. And so that will be, that'll be interesting too. You know, I'm concerned. I look at areas I'm concerned about, and, you know, I'm concerned about the game of football. I hope that the CFL can get back going. You know, intercollegiate football and the CFL have such an important relationship in tandem. And so, you know, this, the survival of the CFL is so crucial to university football. And I hope that continues. and you look at those contact sports, I think in Canada, we're a little lucky that, you know, even a pandemic can't stop most hockey parents and hockey players. But you look at some of those contact sports, one of our only sports not practicing is the sport of wrestling. And if you think about it, how can you wrestle socially distanced? You cannot. So that's one sport where I wonder when is its time to come back and what will it look like? Because, you know, other than being tested, you can't really practice together right now. And I feel sorry for those athletes as they watch their fellow Griffins practice, but you know, there is no return to play proper protocol for training that allows us to do in an environment that we feel is safe for everybody.
Wrestling's probably just not the same if we were to adapt it to hazmat suits or something.
I mean, maybe virtual reality where you, you have all those buttons on it, but you know, it's a, when you talk about a contact sport, you can still do train hockey safe. You can still do work on football without hitting someone. There's lots of apparatuses and you have the pads and stuff like that. So there's lots of things you can do. Even rugby, we're able to do it without, you know, the scrum. So it will be interesting what happens with that. It will be interesting the technology that comes out of it, you know, face shields and stuff that people are looking at. So I think technology and equipment will change a little bit. You heard when the government came out about no contact if OHL wants to return. I mean, I think the decision's been reversed. Whether the OHL goes off or not, I'm not sure. But, you know, how do you play the game of hockey where you can't body, you know, it doesn't have to be body checking, but you're still in position out front taking the person in the defensive zone. So, I mean, how you play the game without contact, it's difficult.
Contact happens when you're flying down the ice on skates, whether you intend it or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm just going to do a quick sign off so I can end the recording. Okay. Well, Scott McRoberts, thank you so much for all your insights today and all your hard work that you and your staff are putting into to keep sports alive in this difficult time. I know all the students on campus appreciate it, and I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Adam, and thank you to our students for doing their part in keeping us going.
And once again, that is Scott McRoberts, and you can find him on Twitter at GriffinsAD. You can also get updates about all University of Guelph teams, sports, and athletics facilities at their website, griffins.ca. That is Griffins with a GRYPHONS. .ca, although there are no games or tournaments planned for the rest of this semester. If you're missing Griffin Athletics, though, you can at least listen to Griff Nation. It's a podcast, and you can find that wherever you can get your podcasts, including whatever you're listening to this podcast on. And that is it for this edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is usually recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, go to cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. You can also download it from the host Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. And when you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you will get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build that locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, please consider donating to Guelph Politico, and you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, we will see you next time.